Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Most of us are still emotionally battle-scarred from the pandemic. So when word leaks out about a new illness, the world pays attention. But what is hantavirus, and why is it getting so much attention? Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
Investigators are trying to figure out where exposure began and who's been exposed. Just two of the questions as health officials try to control a deadly outbreak of hantavirus, the first ever recorded on a cruise ship. Three people have died. The World Health Organization says there are eight cases, five confirmed. The ship right now is somewhere off the coast of Africa on its way to Spain's Canary Islands at the request of the WHO. But the point of infection may have been in Argentina. The concern about the spread of that virus. Leah Bauck is an epidemiologist with the Minnesota Department of Health.
The incidence is very low in Minnesota, and it's rare that we see people in Minnesota infected with hantavirus in general. Even though person-to-person transmission is possible with this certain type, it isn't as compatible for transmission as some other types of diseases that we may think of when we think about, large outbreak situations.
She says rodents predominantly carry the virus. Humans who come in contact with an infected rodent or even their feces and urine can catch it.
Here's more on hantavirus and what the heck it is from Ian Hawk on WWL in New Orleans.
On the line right now is Dr. Patrick Jackson, an associate professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Virginia. What is the hantaviruses?
So hantaviruses are a family of viruses that occur around the world, mostly in association with rodents that can cause severe disease and have caused an outbreak now in this ship, the MV Hondius, currently around in the Atlantic Ocean.
Usually you hear about it in people's barns or sheds. They go in and they're cleaning something out after a long winter, and they're stirring up all the, rodent excrement, and that's how you get an infection. Why is this cruise ship outbreak unusual? What happened here?
So what's unusual about this cruise ship outbreak is that it seems to be caused by the only one of the many hantaviruses that can be transmitted from person to person. As you say, most of these hantaviruses people pick up when they get in contact with rodents and rodent excrement and things like that. But here it seems that not only happened at least once for a passenger on this cruise ship, but probably passengers on the cruise ship have been transmitting between each other, which was quite unusual and seems to occur only with the Andes virus, which is the hantavirus implicated in this case.
And why does the person-to-person spread matter so much? That seems to be the newsiest thing about all this. That is unusual. This is the only strain. The Andes virus strain is the only hantavirus that does this. As a person who studies infectious diseases, how concerned are you about this person-to-person transmission?
Well, not particularly. We've known that person-to-person transmission of Andes virus occurs from previous relatively small outbreaks. It's not a very communicable virus, so the outbreaks that have occurred have been pretty limited. And a cruise ship really is the optimal situation for a respiratory virus to transmit from one person to another. So this is kind of the virus's best chance. It's really concerning for the folks who are involved, of course, but I don't think there's much risk of a broader outbreak.
What do you call that? I remember during the COVID pandemic, we heard so much about it starts with R, R-naught, right?
Yes, exactly.
Explain to us what the R-naught is.
So R-naught is a way of expressing if one person is infected with a virus, on average, how many additional people are they going to infect? So, for example, the R-naught of measles is about 15. So one person with measles in a fully susceptible population would be expected to infect another 15 people. The R-naught with COVID at various stages of the pandemic was like 2 to 3. I don't think we have a number for Andes virus, but you would expect it to be less than 1 in those circumstances, which means that it's not going to persist in a population.
Nice. Okay, good. Well, that's good news for most of us, but for the people who have symptoms, are they in some trouble? How serious is that infection once you come down?
Yeah, so the New World hantaviruses, which include Andes virus and the Zinambre virus, can be very severe. They cause a condition called hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, and it's a mortality rate of around about 40% for folks who get infected.
Whoa, that's pretty high, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very high. So it's a very severe infection. So Nambre virus, one of the other hantaviruses that occurs in the States, seems to be the cause of the death of Gene Hackman's wife. Mm-hmm. There have been about 1,000 cases in the United States ever of Nambre virus. And yeah, somewhere in the range of 25 to 50%, most people say about 40% case fatality rate.
Doctor, we all Googled hantavirus during the commercial break. It is because it originated from the Hantan River in South Korea, where that virus was first identified. So as is the case with many communicable diseases, it's named after the place where it was first discovered, right?
Yeah, except for the Nambre virus, which in the United, of course, is the Spanish for virus without a name. Originally was going to be called the Four Corners virus, but that's not very good for tourism.
No, it sure isn't.
Nambre.
Yes, having grown up in the Four Corners, I'm glad that there was not a Four Corners virus that we had to worry about. Okay, so it seems like, I don't know, you're the expert. The hantavirus thing on the cruise ship seems like kind of an isolated case, right?
I think it does highlight that there's an ongoing risk of unusual infections, and that infections like this don't respect national borders. So things like this outbreak are going to happen in the future, though this particular outbreak is likely not a major threat for folks.
So what should people understand about rare infections when they're traveling abroad?
Well, it's always good to consult with a travel physician before your trip, so you can get necessary vaccines, get counseling about malaria prophylaxis. If that's part of what you're doing, talk about how to avoid water and foodborne illnesses, which are the more common sorts of things. For folks who are going to be in places with hantaviruses, there are definitely precautions you can take to avoid contact with rodents.
I'm curious, too, in your position from where you are and what you do in your line of work, how complex is it for public health officials to kind of unpack what happens on a cruise ship? Because it's not as if you go into, you know, an isolated village where there's an Ebola outbreak or, you know, every it's all happening in one country where everybody's kind of in the same community. When you have a cruise ship that's moving from port to port, that's, you know, people are getting on and off, perhaps they're all from different countries. How big is the challenge to kind of containerize that outbreak in a situation like that?
This has been a really huge challenge. And not only is it happening on a ship that's moving from place to place, but very remote places in the South Atlantic Ocean. And this response has really been coordinated by the World Health Organization, who's done things like managed testing for an unusual virus at centers in Senegal and in South Africa, helping to do the tracking of folks who got off of the boat in St. Helena and then got on planes to Europe and North America, et cetera. And really the WHO is kind of the essential piece of connecting all of these national health ministries to each other. And ensuring that we can kind of keep track about where people have gone and make sure that they're being taken care of appropriately if they get sick in the future.
Do you think cruise lines should do differently when people become ill at sea or something? I remember at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, what was the Princess cruise ship that got stuck out there mm-hmm. in the Pacific? I'd like to see the cruise companies do differently.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't take a lot of cruises and partially because of the risk of infectious diseases. The classic one, of course, on cruise ships is the norovirus, right? A GI virus generally causes about 12 to 48 hours of nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Doesn't kill many people, but I've had it before and I wish that it killed me when I was in the middle of it.
Oh, man.
Cruise operators need to pay attention to national and international regulations about infection control, about monitoring people who get on board to make sure that they're not sick at the time and have kind of rigorous standards for cleaning. That wouldn't have helped here, I don't think. The hantavirus, the Andes virus has a very long incubation period. And so likely when the passengers who had the Andes virus got on board, they were feeling perfectly well. And there would have been no reason to suspect that they were carrying this potentially transmissible virus with them.
Switching gears, when most of us get sick, or at least when we got sick as kids, the person who tended to take care of us was mom. And her day is this weekend. There's still time for a great Mother's Day. Here's Noon Business Hour in Chicago.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now to discuss is Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. First off, you know, a lot of moms, and I've heard this one before. When you ask mom what she wants for Mother's Day, you hear they just want time with their kids. Maybe that is one of the best gifts that you can give mom this year.
It is always the greatest gift. You know, when you're raising kids, you're spending a lot of time with them, carting them here and there, you know, their games, school activities, blah, blah, blah. But when they get a little older, you don't get to spend as much time with them. So yes, you do want to spend time with them, and sometimes just real uninterrupted time. And, you know, especially I have kids and grandkids, and I love spending time with all of them together. But when I get one-on-one with my daughter, for example, it's just so precious to me. So yeah, that's always good. But, you know, you look at a lot of gifts right now and it's kind of like, don't screw up. But there's a lot of things you can give that aren't terribly expensive, although you just said the gas prices. I was thinking, well, maybe you should buy your mom a tank of gas for her car. That would be
not exactly the most luxurious gift, but definitely, you know, practical. You know, Jennifer, again, you talk about those experiences, and that is so true. You know, spending quality time with family. Obviously, it's dependent, you know, based on things your mom likes or kind of family dynamics. What are some of the maybe family activities that you can do just to get some quality time with mom this year?
Well, there's a number of things you can do, one of which is, and this is something, I don't know that you want to spend time, you know, planting a garden with your mom, but this is something I gave my mom who really liked, and then I would bring over flowers and then spend time with her planting them, and then, you know, maybe bringing over new gardening gloves or gardening tools or something like that. But there's other things that you can do too. My mom will also love jigsaw puzzles. So if you just sat and did a jigsaw puzzle with her and, you know, hung out, that was great too. But movie night, you know, you people have movie nights and game nights and do something like that. I mean, there's a ton of things you can do just to spend time with them. And there's one where I saw create a day of yes, where she just gets to choose what she wants and you just go, okay, whatever you want, I'll do. But there's a lot of things you can do. Simple experiences like a spa, well, that's not exactly cheap, but it's always a great and thoughtful gift for me. But then you can also do things like, you know, just take a walk or a hike or cook a meal together or bring a meal over.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned spa days and things like that. Obviously, Mother's Day brunch, obviously a really popular one. You know, if you are planning on spending time with mom, but you also want to be sure that she can open something or you can give her something, and maybe you have kind of put that off a little bit, you know, and life can kind of get away from us here. Any last minute gift ideas that you might not be too late to surprise mom with on Sunday?
Well, there's a lot of things, you know, you can do self-care items like, you know, buffing bars, bubble bath, bath soap, face creams, those kind of things. You go to an Ulta or Sephora or even a Nordstrom and you'll find those things already gift wrapped for you for the most time. But, you know, if your mother's a bird lover, give her a feeder. If she's, you know, I have a lot of friends who've gotten into Mahjong and pickleball. Give her something that's related to that. Put together a photo memory or handwritten notes are always nice. Or, you know, just books or, you know, whatever your mom might be into, it would be easy to add something to that to give her, you know, a little extra something special that will complement it.
Really helpful stuff. I hope my mom's not listening. A tank of gas, I might steal that one as a great gift this
year. I hope my daughter's listening.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, as always. That is Jennifer Waters.
Here's more on Mother's Day from Vanita Soccer on WCCO in Minneapolis.
Susie Jones, what do you want for Mother's Day?
It's such an interesting question, and I say that only because over the years, it has been different.
Has it?
Well, when they were little, I just wanted time away. I just wanted a break. I wanted to go for a walk by myself and not have someone come in the bathroom with me.
Because toddlers are insufferable creatures who ruin everything.
They do.
I understand.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now that's evolved. There was a time when I loved a little handmade something. You know, the kids would make stuff at school. That was always delightful, right? I think I have gotten a lot of flowers, whether they be fresh cut or something. Like, I got a hanging basket from a friend yesterday.
That's a good one.
I think flowers are always nice.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be honest, and money meant nothing, I love spa stuff. You know, I had a facial yesterday.
So nice.
Gosh, and a massage, and a steam, and a hot tub. Now, some of that, as I said, I get at the Marsh, you know, but I don't get a massage. I just have the foo-foo stuff. But yeah, what about you? What? I mean, people could say jewelry. I don't know. I'm not a big, I think it's a little bit manufactured of holiday that get us to spend more money.
It's definitely a manufactured holiday. I understand that. And it's also really hard. You know, Susie Jones, this is going to be the first Mother's Day without my mother.
Oh,
I know. So which is awful. And I have been thinking about that. So it's fine. But the things I want are, I like to do an activity with the kids.
That's a great thing.
So like 1 year we went to Topgolf.
Oh,
you know, none of us are great golfers or anything, but it was just an activity. We ordered food and we hit some balls.
I bet you laughed your head off.
We had a great time.
Yeah.
One of my standard Mother's Days was we all have to take a walk around the lake and you can't complain. So it was always something that was an activity to sort of take us out of that whole, let's have brunch and have to talk to each other because we talk to each other every day and we're sick of each other.
Right.
But I did, the reason I bring it up is yes, to remind every single person here, you had a mother or have a mother, so just a heads up that it's Mother's Day on Sunday. But also because I was reading this study that said most moms, and you can relate to this, want time off.
Yeah, that's what I said initially.
They want time off, and they also want more help. Now, again, if it's really a Mother's Day present, more help on Mother's Day, breakfast in bed on Mother's Day, that's just one day. What we really want is more help for the rest of the year.
Right. And what does that look like? That could be coming over on an afternoon making dinner or coming over and doing the laundry or coming over and doing those jobs that you don't want to do, like clean the toilet or do the dishes. That's a very nice gift to give someone to take something off the list.
100%.
Someone a lot of moms love is crooner Josh Groban. Hint, hint. And WWJ in Detroit checked in with him ahead of an upcoming tour stop.
Who is joining you on this tour?
This summer I'm coming back to Detroit. I'm super excited to return. It's one of my favorite places to perform. And I'm bringing with me Jennifer Hudson, who's one of my absolute favorite people and voices. And it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing for us to both have our schedules match up that we can go out there and sing together and share the stage for one incredible night. And so we're super looking forward to it because I bring in local musicians and singers every city that we visit, that everybody who's sharing a stage with me up there is going to absolutely bring it. They're going to be among the finest singers and musicians in the whole world. So it's just a night it's always been a fun time for us wherever we're playing.
A dollar of every ticket purchased is going towards your Find Your Light Foundation. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what the Find Your Light Foundation is?
We're a grant giver. We give to hundreds of organizations that are at real risk of going under, and they reach out to us to make sure that they can get a grant so that they can stay alive, so that young people can have access to the very thing that helps them discover who they are as human beings. We found that arts education is unbelievably vital to a young person's education. It was for me, saved me in so many ways. And so at a time when there's just so much division, I feel like the arts remind us who we are, remind us of our humanity. And so the fact that I get to go out there and recharge my soul with people every night, and in doing so, we're going to raise a lot of money for young people to hopefully do the same, it makes me happier than ever. It's so important. My favorite thing is when people come up to me and they're not in an artistic job, and they say, you know, even though I'm a lawyer now or a doctor now or whatever it is, you know, I always remember that music teacher, that theater teacher, that art teacher that, you know, that opened up my heart and just turned the light bulb on, you know, because we all need to feel seen. We need to feel heard. And I think that having the arts and having those teachers and those programs help us discover who we are as human beings, whether we go into the arts professionally or not.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.